Let's bring in Sage Rosenfels, our NFL analyst for Good Show. Hey, Sage, how excited were you? First of all, how excited were you Thursday night when Flacco got hurt and you got another backup bowl?
Well, I tell you what, these Thursday night games, either they're a terrible game to watch, which this last one was, or they've been a lot of fun. It's like it's hit or miss, it seems like, on Thursday night. So, yeah, but, you know, Flacco goes down and then that game ends up being this sort of this crazy, crazy blowout or whatever. It was a 40-0 on Thursday night. By the way, you're really going out on a limb saying that you really like Deshaun Watson now that he's basically everybody in the league likes Deshaun Watson at this point.
Here's the thing, though. Do you think right now he's a top 10 quarterback? Like, your life is on the line. You get to pick out a top 10 quarterbacks to take you down the field. You're down one score. You need a touchdown. Are there 10 guys that you're taking before Deshaun Watson right now?
Can we put up a statue in front of NRG Stadium with Deshaun Watson's bust on it already? I mean, no, I don't know enough. I mean, he has looked unbelievable, and he really has. And I think he's going to be a really good quarterback for years and years to come. I think he has surprised a lot of people. Everyone knew he was athletic. Everyone knew he was a winner in college. He seemed like he had a strong arm. But nobody really realized how good this kid was going to be in just his rookie season. But again, it's still his rookie season. And it always seems like with rookies that over the course of 16 games or the course of multiple seasons, defensive coordinators start to figure out what do they like, what affects him negatively. And usually over time, those things start to balance out and teams start to figure out, you know, a really good player on the other side of the ball. We haven't seen that yet because it seems like every week he throws three or four touchdown passes. But I don't want to put him in the top 10 yet. I'd love to have him as a quarterback. But, you know, as the season gets longer and the days get shorter and the sunlight gets shorter, I love having those veteran guys who have been around the game for a while, who have been in tight playoff games, who have been in tight games to win the division in December. He is not there yet, but man, I'd love to have him. If I was a franchise, he'd be probably a top five to top seven guy that I'd like to have for the next 10 years for sure.
Hi, it's Ashley. How are you? It's nice to meet you.
I'm doing great, Ashley. Nice to meet you.
I like the fact that you pointed out that, you know, he's still so young into the season and teams really haven't gotten that much of an opportunity to exploit things that he may rely on, crutches that he may develop, being such a young player. And Earl Thomas is a perfect example of that. The pick six that he had in the game early on, he studies game film religiously. And he said that's something that he noticed that he likes to do. And on the play call, he had free rein to kind of take a gamble if he wanted to. And it paid off big time. So when you're looking at Watson and watching him play, is there anything that you kind of see that could be a red flag or something that you see could develop and be, I guess, easy for defenses to kind of exploit going forward?
Well, and if you go back and watch that interception from a quarterback's perspective, so the Seattle Seahawks were playing basically a form of quarters coverage, basically four, you know, two safeties sort of on near the hashes and two corners on the outside. So they each sort of have a quarter deep. Well, the Texans were in a trips formation, which means, you know, three receivers to their left and one to their right. So in that play, the safety, Thomas, was the backside safety. So he really has no responsibility in that play. That the trips are to the opposite side of him, which means he can sort of hunt up the sort of the tight end position or the number three player on the Texans offense, or he can help out the guy who's singled up there, you know, at the what would be the top of your screen. So in that situation, that's where a veteran quarterback knows of all the places to not go with the football, it's to the number three receiver, you know, crossing the field right to where Earl Thomas was. And so I think that over time, over these next eight or nine games, whatever the Texans have the rest of the season, I believe that defenses are going to try to continue to try to confuse him with multiple coverages because he has places he likes to go with the football. He has receivers he likes to throw the football to. There's concepts that he really likes as a young quarterback. But when defenses start taking away those easy completion concepts and start really confusing you and dropping safeties down and swapping safeties and corners and playing sort of inverted and sliced coverages, That's where a young quarterback can really struggle and start throwing interceptions. And we all know turnovers in any football game, but in particular in November and December, can really come back to haunt you.
Yeah, and they burn him for 10 points because he had the pick six, and then the Sherman interception ends up in his field goal. So, yeah, he'll make those mistakes. I just look at him right now and say trying to game plan for him would just be a disaster considering all the things that he feels so comfortable doing. He also, there seems to be an air about him already where the team really is behind him. And it's just so strange that they ended up starting the season with Savage on the depth chart ahead of him. And by the way, what'd you make of the call that Bill O'Brien made, basically deciding that his defense was going to decide the football game and not letting Deshaun Watson have the football there on third and short? Seattle, again, had trouble containing him on third downs. Like, if you're the quarterback in that situation, do you take that? Are you able to just take that very easily?
Well, the NFL it's one of those things where it's always easy to go back and say, well, they should have done this, right? Well, if Seattle doesn't hit that, 60-some yarder where Russell Wilson gets them out from the 10-yard line or 12-yard line, wherever they were, this is all a moot point. But you play the percentages, you play the numbers in that situation. You want the clock to keep running. You want the other team to make sure they use their timeouts. You punt them down to inside their own 15-yard line, and you count on your defense, which a year ago was the number one or number two defense in almost every major category in the NFL. They haven't been as good this year. You'd like to say, yeah, my best player right now is my quarterback. He's dangerous. He can do all these things. But you play the percentages generally as a head coach, and you generally that usually works out. Of course, when it doesn't, it's always easy to go back with 20/20 vision and say, well, Bill O'Brien should have done this, that, or the other. So I think what's exciting about Deshaun Watson is he's probably one of the best or one of the top two or three playmaking quarterbacks in the NFL. And that just doesn't happen. I saw him throw a ball 67 yards in the preseason, flat-footed. So, the fact that people go, well, he's an athletic quarterback. Well, yeah, he is. He's also a winner. He also has a cannon for an arm. He's also pretty dang accurate. So he is a very exciting young player. The Texans and a team that I played for 3 years, they've been looking for a premier quarterback for a long time. This might be the best pick of the entire 2017 draft.
Yeah, it feels like maybe some success at the college level is going to be a little bit, it's maybe a little bit more valued now going into the draft after what Deshaun Watson's done. I never really understood why he was slipping anyways or what the doubts were of him, especially when you look at him now. I guess the only thing with O'Brien, and I get it, percentages, it's just that he can run as well. So why not just have him run a bootleg? Either he takes a sack, you're basically in the same situation as you were anyways. I just thought it was cowardly to at least not try to win the game there and let a guy that has had such a good or so much effectiveness against Seattle. And I'm a Seattle fan. And so as soon as they ran the football, I was ecstatic. So I looked at it from the standpoint of, if I'm a fan of the other team, what do I want them to do? And what I wanted them to do in that spot was run the ball and give Russell Wilson a chance. And speaking of Russ, where do you think he stacks up in the MVP candidacy right now? Because to me, it was a big knock on him when he had Marshawn Lynch that this is a guy who is supported by a great running back and has a great defense and is not asked to do too much. And so that was the doubt. That was what people that doubted him would point to immediately. Now, I think he might have the worst offensive line in football, or one of the bottom three anyways. He's probably got the worst running game in all of football. I don't think any of his running backs are any effective since they lost Carson. And even if you look at his weapons, Doug Baldwin is probably the only plus receiver that he has out of his entire group. It feels to me like no one is doing more with less than Russell Wilson right now.
Well, you're exactly right. I mean, if you look at the stats in that football game, where Russ threw for 450 yards, but he also led the team in rushing at 30 yards, and the next guy had 6 yards of rushing. So it's the offensive line has been the biggest issue on this football team all year. It was an issue last year, and then last year it really hurt. Russell Wilson was hurt last year, so he couldn't create and do all these things that he's now doing. He's you put Russell Wilson, Deshaun Watson, obviously Aaron Rodgers. You're even seeing it with Case Keenum in Minnesota. These quarterbacks who are accurate when you just drop back and you run your main concepts, but when things break down, which they always do, like on about half the pass plays, they don't go as planned. Russell Wilson is so good, and those other guys have become so good at being creative after the original play is called, after the original execution aspect of the play breaks down. And he's the best deep ball thrower in the NFL. He throws for over 50% on throws that are like 35 or 40 yards plus, which is just incredible.
That one he dropped in the breadbasket on McAvoy. Oof.
It's incredible. And he's so strong. He's hard to bring down. He's got unbelievably great balance. He will probably go down, in my opinion, as the best short quarterback in NFL history when it's all
better than Breeze.
Well, he's different than Breeze. And, you know, Breeze is 6 foot. Russell Wilson's 5'10". I mean, he is 5'10". So, you know, Breeze is sort of in the middle. He's shorter. But Breeze is, you know, Breeze is a thrower. He is the most accurate thrower. Russell Wilson is a create guy. He's a great thrower, too, but he's a create guy. And he along with some other guys, are sort of part of the new wave of, I think, the future of the NFL was not just a guy who can throw from the pocket, which you have to be a thrower first. You have to be an accurate thrower who can understand defense and understand concepts and see who's open. But this new wave of guys who go, okay, when that doesn't work, can we still get a positive play or even a big play in our offense? And Russell Wilson is really sort of the head of those quarterbacks who are doing these things that, you know, can make a coordinator pull their hair out. But in this situation, they love, because they usually good things happen when Russell Wilson is running around with the football in his hands.
Sage, I hope that there's some angry Doug Flutie fans tweeting at you right now since you left him out of the short quarterback conversation. But all the things you mentioned about Russell Wilson, it's so true, and the stuff that he does is amazing. But when you do look at the team as a whole, it's a lot to put on one person. Their run game is atrocious. They've rushed for under 700 yards as a group when there's five players in the league who have rushed for over 500 by themselves. There's three people who have rushed for more individual than the whole Seattle team as a whole. So when you look at everything that he's asked to do, when he's running out of the pocket, when he's scrambling, when he's making himself susceptible to injuries, to more contact, isn't it concerning that this is something that he might not be able to sustain at such a high level for as long as they might need him to have success in the long term?
Well, that's exactly right. And Seattle for years has been a team that played great defense. They've been a top five defense, probably the best defense over the course of the last 6 or 7 years on a whole in the NFL. But they've had that running game. And with the running game, it was play action. It was some bootleg, you know, naked bootleg type stuff. Well, they don't have the running game anymore. And that now this is Wilson who, you know, actually has to be the guy to really carry the football team on his back. He didn't have to do that when they won the Super Bowl. He didn't have to do that when they almost won their second Super Bowl. He had such a good team around him. He was just sort of this key, you know, make the right play at the right time and whatever, but he really managed the game very well. Now he has to carry this team. Can he do it for 16 games? Can he do it in playoff games? They are lucky. They're not in a great division. Now, obviously, the 49ers are terrible. The Cardinals aren't very good. So it's not a great division over there in the NFC West this year. That's the question, is can he do this all year? And my guess is no. I think they'll be a playoff team, but I don't see them getting maybe through the first round, but not the second or the third or the conference championship game, because you have to have a run game, I believe, in the league, something that really scares the defense, because if you don't, there's so many things defense coordinators can do when teams have no running game. They can dial up crazy blitzes. They can do a lot of confusing coverages. And for any quarterback late in the year against really good football teams, that can just be too much to deal with.
It drives me crazy that Seattle can't figure out a running. It was always going to be difficult to find a running back after you lose a guy like Marshawn Lynch, but there were flashes of Thomas Rawls, and the Eddie Lacy signing looks perplexing now because the guy just simply can't run anymore. But with there's so many teams that have multiple running backs, to look at Seattle and say you couldn't identify one guy, I guess the Carson injury really did hurt them. But another guy that has some depth there that you can hand the ball to is somewhat threatening. That would be pretty nice. So the Bills, by the way, they get it done again. Are you buying them?
Oh, yeah, I'm in for the Bills. I like the Bills because I like their defense. I mean, their defense is really good. I've always said Tyrod Taylor is sort of a poor man's Russell Wilson. I mean, he throws a good deep ball. He's a threat against the run. He's one of these guys that can create a little bit. LeSean McCoy is absolutely a stud. There is a reason that they were number one in the NFL last year in rushing, okay? And I believe that actually the quarterback position can really help the running back in the rushing game, because when he's a threat, defensive ends and linebackers have to slow down a little bit. They have to play that fake on those zone read types of plays, because he is a legitimate threat to run, and he also throws the ball very well. So, but starting off, the Buffalo's defense is very good. I love the way that they're coached. They don't do anything really confusing. but they make defense, they make other offenses really earn it, down the field. And it's really hard for an NFL offense to go 12, 14, 15 plays and work their way down the field without a holding penalty, without a drop pass in third and four, without some sort of turnover. And this team creates turnovers, and they make it really hard to score for opposing offenses.
It's like one of my favorite things is like the John Fox school of football, where it's like to be successful, or at least to threaten teams that are really in that upper echelon, you don't really need a great quarterback. You need like an okay quarterback, a strong, strong running game, and a top, top defense. And those are the things that the Vikings, who we were talking about a little bit before, they definitely possess. And we were talking, JD and I have a little bit of a difference of opinion on this, because you're talking about Teddy Bridgewater potentially coming back. He's practicing. Everyone's saying he's looking stronger.
You're going down the wrong road with the wrong guy. I'm telling you, Sage loves Case, just like me.
That's fine. I just need his opinion, because although Case Keenum hasn't been losing, he hasn't done anything egregious, but what gives you the best shot going forward?
Well, obviously, you haven't listened to me on this show for the last couple of
weeks. It's not you, it's JD that I try to avoid as much as possible, Sage. Please don't take offense.
I feel like I bought Case Keenum his stock when it was low, and I'm riding this sucker, and it is very high right now.
Right into the sunset.
He's not flashy. He's not flashy. He doesn't do anything amazing. He doesn't throw a ball 70 yards down the field and make Deshaun Watson type plays. But if you go back, if you're a Vikings fan or you care about the NFC North at all, go just watch the highlights of that game they played against Cleveland in London, okay? And, of course, they're playing the Browns. But if you watch the highlights, Case Keenum, almost every play he makes in that game, that's a significant play, you know, a 20-yard pass or more, touchdowns. They're almost never on time. He goes back there, and it's one hitch, he gets flushed out of the pocket, and then, boom, somebody comes open, or he goes back there, one hitch, and then an interior D lineman comes free, and he just moves a little bit in the pocket, buys a little time, and allows his guys to get open down the field. And then he's very accurate. That's what's really surprising. A lot of times these guys who are backups, who are maybe a little bit more mobile guys and can run around a lot, they make mistakes, or they're not really accurate. Case Keenum's very accurate, and so he's doing a lot of good things to this football team. He's protecting the football very well. He had a pick in the game, but it was a tip pass by a D lineman, which really isn't the quarterback's fault. So I think he's – I don't know why everyone's like, well, when Teddy comes back or when Sam Bradford – why? Case Keenum is doing everything he can do to win football games, and even the two losses that the Vikings had this year, he played fine. He played well. He didn't throw interceptions and do all types of bad things. So I actually think this Vikings team is better. If Sam Bradford comes back 100% healthy tomorrow, he's riding the bench. Case Keenum's my guy, and I think you keep riding with him until somehow he has two or three bad games in a row. He's playing really good football and has become really probably the best offseason signing by almost any team in the NFL last year, about $2 million a year as a backup quarterback.
Do you make Case a little uncomfortable when you're around him, though, now?
Why is that? Because I like him so much?
You just gush over Case. He's your guy.
I had you from the beginning, Case. I support it. When people doubted you, it was me. It was always me.
I just love that this former Rams quarterback that I used to love seeing as a Seahawks fan come into a game has evolved into a quarterback that, I don't even know if it's evolved or if he's just getting a better chance with a better team. But yes, you're right. He's been great. And I just don't understand the whole what's going to happen with Teddy Bridgewater when he comes back. Because why would you put in a quarterback that hasn't played in two seasons over a guy that's winning football games right now and actually executing well? It's not as though the Vikings are just winning based on their defense or that Jerick McKinnon and Latavius Murray are carrying them. It's like, no, this guy is legitimately winning games for the Vikings. I've never really understood the controversy. I'm very much with you. I wasn't originally. I thought Case Keenum was definitely a bum when they first went to him. But now I'm looking at him and saying, this guy can play. He can play, and until he proves otherwise, there's no reason to consider taking him out of the lineup.
I can't believe you're denying Teddy Bridgewater the most epic comeback story in the history of life after he basically lost a leg to lead the Vikings to the Super Bowl.
Go do it somewhere else, Teddy.
Okay. Two things with that. One, you were talking about how bad he was at the Rams. He was 4-5 as the Rams starter last year, right? But you remember how bad the Rams were offensively last year?
Yes, they stuck.
And all of a sudden, somehow Jared Goff went from a bust to a really good player. Sometimes coaching actually matters, right? And I firmly believe that whoever was calling the plays, designing the plays, The offensive coaching staff was less than subpar for the LA Rams last year. It was less than subpar for Jeff Fisher for a lot of his coaching career. And now he's on a better football team, and he's, I think, with better coaches and better offensive players around him. And he's sort of, you know, making the most of his opportunity. I think we're going to know a lot about Case Keenum in the next 3 weeks. I believe they've got they have a bye coming up, and then they've got three road games in a row. And two of them against very good opponents. And so we'll know a lot about Case Keenum when we get to about Thanksgiving time, and we'll see if he is still the starter at that point. I believe he will be. And one of those games is a Thanksgiving Day game against the Detroit Lions. And so I'm glad Case is going to have his opportunity to play on national television and hopefully get the big, huge $25 million contract that somehow never got. Yeah,
you're just so excited for your boy to play on national TV. Come on, Case.
There's like genuine elation in his voice.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Hey, buddy, it's always great having you. Thanks for stopping in today.
All right, thanks for having me on.